Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Dreamboat Podcast Goes to the Movies.
Yeah.
This time around, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. We've got a dream-themed movie, and we're going to try and do our analysis on that beautiful art
so
on the big screen.
If you have some submissions in, we did not forget about you. We have them in our Gmail. Thank you very much for sending your submissions to dreamboatpodcast@gmail.com.
But enough about that. What movie are we watching this week, Connor?
Well, I think before we do that, I'm just going to go ahead and introduce myself as Connor.
And I'm going to go ahead and say, hi, I'm Scott.
And and this is the Dreamboat Podcast, a dream analysis podcast. So today this is Dreamboat Goes to the Movies, and today we're going to be analyzing one of my personal favorite films is Akira Kurosawa's Dreams. It's a 1990 movie made by the Japanese film director, cinematographer, writer Akira Kurosawa, known mostly for like his samurai movies, I would say.
Can you tell that I'm super jazzed to start analyzing this thing? Because this movie was bonkers. Connor had seen it before. I had never seen it before. And overall, recommendation, A+. This was a really cool movie.
Yeah, it's and it's set up, I would say, episodically, in that he has had these many dreams all throughout his life. And he made this film when he was 80 years old. In 1990, it was produced by Martin Scorsese. It's beautiful, production value is really high, and it's really interesting to watch. Check it out. You can get it on Amazon, Amazon Prime. I think I bought it a long time ago on Amazon, so I have it in my records.
But yeah, no, it has sort of these different chapters, these sequences, and it captures pretty uncannily a lot of the feel of what it is to be kind of like stuck in a dream with the dream logic or just the sort of trippy, dreamy visuals. There's a lot of variety between the dreams, but how about we try and tackle the first act first?
That sounds good. Yeah, well, I guess since it is broken and it is chapterized, if you will, there's chapterization in this film.
Yes.
We'll do it bit by bit.
Okay, so the very first chapter.
And they all have titles, by the way.
Right. What is the title of the first one?
Sunshine Through the Rain.
Okay, and that was the cool thing. So it opens on this shot of sort of like the front gate of, I don't know, a house or some sort of like residential complex or something, right? And there's a little kid who's standing out there.
He's probably like 6.
Well, just the opening shot, it's raining, and I was like thinking to myself, that's some weird light going on there. And then they say, oh, it's a sun shower, which is, you know, it's raining, even though the sun is out. And
I believe there's like 5 seconds in the beginning, he steps outside where it's perfectly clear, and then after 5 seconds, it starts pouring. So it like is sunny for a second, and then it just starts coming down.
I don't remember that. I just remember being really like off put by just the scene because it's weird seeing a brightly lit set and also having the rain going at the same time.
But. Yeah, no, I went back and watched it because all of a sudden, like, he steps out and then it's kind of sunny and it's like 5 seconds and then it starts pouring. And then, like you were saying, his mother runs around with an umbrella, and that's when she tells him that these special kind of rain showers is when the fox spirits have their wedding ritual, and that you mustn't disturb them.
Just as a quick aside here, did you know that there's a term in the southern United States for when it rains while the sun is out?
Does it have something to do with Creedence Clearwater Revival?
No, it's just a really tasteless expression that I want to share. In Hungary as well, apparently, a sun shower is said to show that the devil's beating his wife.
Oh.
Oh.
Have you ever seen the rain coming down Sunday?
Yeah. But I'm looking at Wikipedia. Apparently, this is a very common thing among many cultures in folklore that foxes or wolves get married during sun showers. This is something that's not just in Japanese folklore. So I thought that was kind of an interesting aside.
Yeah. Well, let's continue. So as any good young boy would do, he disregards his mom's warnings and he heads out to the woods. And these woods are huge. It's like really big trees, and he's walking through. It's very quiet. And then all of a sudden, just out of the fog, is this procession of fox spirits. So in the film, it's very stylized. There are people wearing masks doing this very slow walk, slow procession. And there's more or less men on one side wearing these like flat circular hats and women on the other side with these shawls. And they have this fox makeup masks.
And they're doing this choreographed walk. Well, I guess it's part of the wedding procession, but it's all very like ritualized. It looks like very creepy. They're all moving in unison. It almost looks like the prowl that a fox would do in the forest. Like they stop and look almost over their shoulder, like they heard a branch snap or something. Mm-hmm. It's very cool. They do the interpretive fox dance really well.
We never find out what the fox says though. Anyway, they're marching past it. He's hiding behind a tree, and then all of a sudden they like turn and see him all at once, and he like jumps and runs home.
Oh, and then mom's like, oh no, you can't come in, sorry.
Yeah, this is where it gets crazy. This is where it gets crazy.
She goes, bad news, dude, and hands him a little package, and he opens it up, and it's a fucking knife. And they're like, you gotta kill yourself, dude.
Yeah, you have to commit seppuku. Seppuku? Seppuku? What's the...
Seppuku.
Seppuku. There you go. Thank you, Scott. In the Japanese style, because she says, an angry fox came by and told me to give you this.
Told you to kill yourself.
And that you have to kill yourself, and... You can do that, or you can try to go ask for forgiveness, but they don't do that very often, and you are not allowed back in here. And he even tries to go to the little side door, and the little side door is locked. Work. Yeah. Oh, it's
and she's like, you better be ready to kill yourself. They don't like usually let people out.
And this kid's like 6 years old.
It's so fucked.
So she says that mom's like, well, they live out under the rainbow. So he heads out. Like walking through this field, this beautiful flowery meadow. There's like yellow, pink, and purple flowers everywhere. And then there's this big rainbow. And it ends with this little boy.
Doesn't resolve itself at all.
He's carrying the knife out under the rainbow. And it just slowly fades to black with that being the resolution.
I kind of loved that one a lot. I thought that was very... captured the feeling really well. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole dream logic being explained to you in a really matter of fact way, but it's complete like garbage, doesn't make any sense. Like I captured the feel very well, that first one.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
So Connor, I actually got a new tool to help us in our dream analysis.
Oh, lay it on me, my dude.
So there is a dictionary of dreams that is apparently well known within Middle Eastern cultures for being sort of like an old school tome on how to interpret symbols in dreams. Ooh. It's called Ibn Sirin's Dictionary of Dreams, according to Islamic inner tradition. So now we can start broadening the scope of our interpretation more than just Google. I've got this book, maybe we can start getting some other ones from other parts of the world
That sounds great. We get the holistic whole shebang.
But I've just looked up fox in this book just to see what a fox would represent according to Ibn Sirin here.
Yeah, what do they say about foxes?
It's not good. So it says that a fox in a dream represents a lethal enemy, a perfidious person, a liar, a poet, or someone who defrauds people. So like a trickster kind of figure.
Interesting.
Which I guess was kind of, well, like, you know, sneaky or like hiding, you know, they're only visible during the sun shower. So that fits in with the dream narrative. Killing a fox in a dream. We didn't see that. Battling a fox in a dream. Didn't see that.
Now, I have found, looking to what, again, culturally, we're talking about a gentleman born in 1910 in Japan. So I looked at what foxes mean in the Japanese culture. And one interesting piece that I found is this idea of kitsune, which is the Japanese word for fox. But it also can refer to, there are these folkloric stories of foxes that have the ability to like shapeshift and are almost kind of like witches in some way, witch animals, which was like a superstition dating back to the 17th century that, I don't know, seems pretty interesting. Maybe they could force you to commit suicide too. I don't know. Yes.
Very, very tricky. They're very tricky.
But, and I think this idea of seeing something you're not supposed to and going against the wishes or going against the warnings of something to some quite severe consequences.
Yeah. It's the you gotta kill yourself with this fox knife consequences. So okay, we have a situation where I think even with the Japanese folklore background, we can agree that the fox kind of represents a trickster or something hidden or like a secret part of society or a part of himself that's supposed to be hidden.
No, I'm leaning here towards secret. And again, these are dreams he's had all throughout his life. So for me, I think this is a dream of regret or of embarrassment, that there's something that he did in his childhood that he's remorseful for.
Oh.
And this is a dream of him maybe working through some of that, knowing that he has to atone for it, and like with being handed that knife, has to take responsibility for what he did when he knew that he wasn't supposed to. Like literally told the moment before he made the decision to not, that he shouldn't do it.
Do you have anything on sun showers and what that would mean? That seems like an interesting one. Yeah. I want to, here's my freestyle on that. Here's what I'm thinking. So we've done like storms before, right? No, we didn't. Well, because your boat won. On one of the first episodes, we sort of tackled what it is to be in a storm. And it was sort of like one of those catch-all, something is outside of your control in your life kind of things, right? Mm. Like the force of nature. But this one, I guess, would be that mixed with, like I don't know, like sunshine, I guess? So help me out here. I'm trying to spitball what a sun shower might represent.
I mean, I looked in Japanese culture. And according to our good friend Wikipedia, it basically just says that in Japan, it's known as Kitsune no Yemeri, which means the fox's wedding.
Oh,
so
okay.
Fox's wedding ceremony is being held. So that could just be...
It could just be the cultural thing, I guess.
But it's also a hell of a thing to dream about. I don't know.
It's something very rare. It's something very special. So maybe that's just like putting the setting there. Like you said before, feeling guilty about something. Maybe this took place on a very special day.
Right. Yeah.
At a very like, you know, venerated occasion.
Or maybe it was a affront against someone who he very deeply respects and is very deeply ashamed of it. Again, we're taking a lot of liberties here.
That's what this podcast's about.
Kind of, yeah.
it continues on though. He gets seen, and then he has to sort of like run run back home and get the knife, and then the mom tells him to go find them.
Before he can get home, an angry fox has already visited his mom. It's like he literally runs straight from the tree where he was seen straight back home. And before he gets there, a fox has like already come and had a conversation with his mom, telling him, hey, like, hey, your son saw us. So here's this knife. Tell him he's got to, like, you know.
You know.
You know. You know what this is for. we're not really into like forgiveness and all that. So
just let him know we're not really into that.
Yeah. But no, it was.
Let him.
Yeah, it was really cool.
It's one of my the rainbow. Also,
well, it also ends with him maybe having to commit suicide. I don't know. So it's
perhaps.
Yeah, it's very open ended, which is, you know, that happens in dreams all the time too.
Well, yeah. Also, the whole thing about the fox outrunning him to the house—that's just like my dreams. When I'm trying to get somewhere before someone, there's no way that they could have got there before me. They always do
in
my dreams.
Right. Yep, and this it wasn't expressly, I think the narrative didn't point to him, I need to get home before the foxes, but whatever, he went straight home and still to no avail.
So apparently here the rainbow is a universal symbol of like good luck and like hope, so perhaps it worked out after all. I mean, there's always that chance that they were forgiving.
Yeah, I would. If I was in that situation, I would hope to have some good luck and a lot of hope too. That they're feeling forgiveful.
It's like wishes coming true. Also, it's like it's a very good one. That's a winner.
That's a good.
Let's see what old Ibn Sirin has to say about rainbows.
Yeah, and then we'll move on to the next one because we got a couple good ones.
Sure.
To march on through.
In a dream, a rainbow means peace and tranquility. Oh, wow. And then there's a whole thing. Like, if red is the dominant color, it gives you all these different flavors of rainbow. But
peace and tranquility. Peace and tranquility. Interesting.
It seems like overall it worked out.
So if you have to go, you have to go atone for your misdoings in a place of peace and tranquility. That's kind of interesting. As in, like, you need to meditate about what you've done, and that's the only way you're really going to be able to get to the other side of that is by, like, a deep analysis and,
you know. You've got to set you free.
Right. Well.
Right.
Essentially, yeah.
Kid did this to himself, and now he's got to wrap his brain around it.
How he's going to make it right with him, you know. With the world, with himself.
Yeah, and he's got to go popsicle himself for the foxes.
Perhaps, if they're not feeling forgiveful that day. Gnarly stuff. So, the second chapter picks up with this young boy again, who I believe is probably Kurosawa as a kid, essentially. And
that was the impression I got.
Yes. The second chapter is titled The Peach Orchard.
Yeah, this one was weird. So again, with the just a quick, we'll go ahead and explain what happens in this one real quick.
Sure. Yeah, I'll give you the at least for the first half, and I think there's some stuff culturally that's different for
us. I'm sure some stuff went right over our heads.
Yeah. So this is what we've got here: is the young boy is bringing this tray of, I don't know if it's tea or snacks, into to his big sister, who seems to have friends over. And they're all in, seems to be very formal attire. And there's this altar there with all of these porcelain dolls. And then later we learn that there's something called Doll Day. So what I guess is this is a holiday, and there are these dolls there. And he brought a tray that had six snacks or six cups of tea, and there's only five girls. And she's like, why'd you bring another one? He's like, no, where's the other girl? And his sister's like, no, you're crazy. There's only been five. And he's like, no, I saw a sixth girl. Where's that sixth girl? And she's like, are you having a fever dream right now? Like, are you feeling okay? He's like, no, I saw the sixth girl. And so he finally leaves them be. And he sees this sixth girl when he looks out the door. She's like just outside the door. It's a really cool shot. And so he like chases after her. And his sister's like, you can't go outside. And he's like running.
But he like can barely see her. It's just like a dream. Like she's always just out of reach, mm-hmm. or like barely in front of him.
Or as soon as he sees her, she's running away.
Right.
And unlike his sister and her friends, this little girl is dressed in like all pink. And when she runs, it's kind of jangly. She kind of
it's like a bell.
Yeah,
like
a little cat jangly bell. Jangly bell. And so he chases after this girl for a while, and then she comes to this like hillside, this almost kind of like what you say, like a tiered, like green tiered hillside where you're the agricultural.
It's like three shelves of greenery, basically.
Yeah, right. More or less, three or more. Anyway, then all of a sudden he's chasing this girl up the like these little steps to the next tier, and then out swoop these, I don't know whether I want to describe it of what they represent or what they were. So what they were these guys in these costumes with like these white masks, and they were holding like rakes and these like interesting
the
outfits.
Biggest sleeves I've ever seen.
Yeah,
these biggest sleeves.
Big old sleeves. And then it kind of like pans out and you see the whole, you know, tiered segment, this whole hillside. And there's probably like 50 or so of these people. And then up at the top, there's this main guy. He's got this like crown with this like big old doily on the top of his head. I don't know. I'm not doing justice to this at all.
Doily does it perfect justice.
Kind of like a quail, kind of like Quail Man. So the head spirit Quail Man is up there, and they all have their faces kind of look like porcelain dolls. That's fair, yeah.
Yeah, they look pretty spooky if you're not familiar with porcelain dolls.
And so he comes to explain that he's very upset with this boy and their family because they cut down the peach orchard that was once on this hillside, and that they represent the spirits of those peach trees, and that on doll day, the dolls also represent the peach blossom. So doll day is once again tied directly to peaches. So
he chews him out. He's like, you guys got rid of this. You don't even understand what this holiday is about anymore.
Right. Then the
like,
boy,
you guys are posers.
And then the boy cries and he's like, oh no. Like, but I told them not to. And then one of them, the snarky one's like, yeah, because you love peaches.
And then they all rear their heads back and
laugh. Yeah, they all laugh. It makes the kid cry harder. And then the kid stands up for himself and he says, no, I cry because you can buy a peach, but you can't buy
an orchard.
An orchard in bloom. Yeah, it was just like, boom.
Can't buy an orchard in bloom.
Fucking mic drop.
Yeah, and they're all like, dang.
Damn, son, he understands.
They're like, listen, we'll give you one last little chance to see the orchard in bloom. And they all become blooming, like where each one of these weirdo doll guys were standing, there's like a peach tree blooming.
Before that, they do this really wild, I don't know if it's wild, but it's very cool, stylized dance. Like they all do this very stylized dance. And as they're doing that, like peach blossoms start falling from the sky, and it's really beautiful. And then, you know, all of a sudden it like cuts to the boy's face, and then it cuts back, and there are all these pink peach blossoms in bloom, like peach trees, all on the hillside. And he like runs up into the peach orchard, and it's so lovely. And then all of a sudden it cuts, and they're all like stumps, except for one sapling in bloom. And the sapling is jangling like the little girl in pink.
And it's right, it's at the last place he saw the girl as he was chasing her up there is where it's sitting. That was a good one. I liked that one a lot.
Whoa.
Okay, so let's try and get some symbols out of this. So
yeah.
starts off with the dolls, right? And also where's the other one? Where's the other girl? That whole bit. That's how it starts out.
Right. Well, and that's something very common in dreams too. It's like, wait a minute, there was like someone was just here. What's going on here?
This thread of withheld information, even some of the ones we've shared here, where it's like there's someone who knows exactly what's going on, but they won't tell you, or like you swore you saw something and it's just out of like the toddler with the knife in Chicago, remember, just like always barely out of view, barely out of reach, like that kind of stuff keeps happening in
which is a dream Scott had, for anyone who has no idea what the hell Scott is talking about.
So I'm gonna look up I guess the obvious look up here is peaches. What the hell could peaches?
Yeah, I'm looking. Let's see. So in this reads that in both China and Japan, the peach is associated with immortality and long life.
Huh.
It's one of the three blessed fruits in Buddhism that symbolizes longevity.
There's blessed fruits of Buddhism?
Sorry, the peach symbolizes longevity. The other two fruits, there's citrus, which is happiness, and pomegranate is fertility. There's so many damn seeds in a pomegranate. Yeah, that's really interesting.
This is good. So under peaches, it says peach tree, see tree. So that's going to be the best I can do.
Okay, yeah, so let's see some trees. There is a... I don't think this is connected, but there is a Japanese myth of someone called the Peach Boy.
Go on.
Momotaro.
What is it?
Momotaro. Momo means peach and taro means eldest son. So it's the Peach Boy. And okay. Inside the peach was a baby boy. So this lady found a peach, and inside the peach, instead of a peach pit, was a baby. And then when the boy was 15, he said, I got to go do something good for the world. And he went and fought off some demons.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Yeah.
This sounds pretty rad, actually. Yeah. Way to go, Peach Boy.
But, okay.
New Marvel title.
We digress.
This is kind of... a huge article here about every different type of tree. It seems like trees are kind of a loaded concept in dreams. Did you get anything for peach trees? Just in general? Like our old Google?
Moving to the country, going to
the bring my fucking peach boy.
Oh, this is some interesting stuff.
You got a good siren. Is that me or you?
Oh, that's me. This is New York City, my dude. Mm. Sirens everywhere.
Oh, found it. Okay, a peach tree in a dream represents a correct person, though few can benefit from him. Or it could be a hypocrite or handsome-looking person. That's a weird couple of things that it could be.
Very strange couple of things. So here's some other ones. Let's see. To dream of peach tree indicates that you'll have good achievements and an unrequited love.
Oh.
To dream of peach trees withering indicates ill luck. Ooh.
That is unrequited love. Just on a surface level here, there's that extra girl, mystery girl.
There is. Mystery girl in pink. And he was right? Very interested in knowing where she went.
Right.
And then, after your older sister's friends. That's like... Every third storyline in a sitcom. Yeah, I'm just trying to bring her a tea,
The snacks are already here. Okay, so it's like a hidden stuff.
Yeah, this one here. Withered? The peach tree's withering away indicates ill luck. So that's a lot of bad luck at the end of that story. But then planting a peach tree, which makes you think of that one sapling, indicates good luck. So there's like hope for good luck. But the other thing that's interesting is that bad luck wasn't necessarily his fault. It was his family. And he protested the cutting down of the peach orchard.
Well, also the peach, like I said before, it represents a correct person. So this is him learning the truth from the peaches, like what the significance of this holiday is what real regret is when they call him out, like, oh, this kid just like stuffing his face with peaches. He's like, no, like, I get it now. It's like the orchard in bloom is one of those good things in life.
Beautiful thing.
Yeah.
A peach tree in your dream shows there are love possibilities coming in your life. Now, hear me out here. Maybe this dream here isn't really at all about peaches. Maybe
I almost did a spit take right there in the water.
Maybe this dream is about, and again, I don't know much about Akira Kurosawa's family and like growing up, so taking all of the liberties here, is maybe he was a young man and he had a sister and really liked his sister's friends, and for some reason his family like didn't let that be a thing, or it could have been like his best friend's sister and like everyone was like, yeah, no, like you can't date my sister. And so this is like he's like destroyed this great love and he's pining over that, and somehow at the end find solace in the fact that, you know, everything will be okay and that there's still hope for love in the future.
Right, because it's just a sapling.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still a kid. He's got plenty of time, you know, to go to the country and eat a lot of peaches.
Peaches.
Oh, God. So, I think that's a really good interpretation, actually. That's probably where, I mean, like you said before, these were not necessarily reoccurring dreams. They're just significant dreams from his life. And so it's not,
I think some of them were reoccurring, but right, we don't have that information, which were, which weren't.
Well, the fact that he chose these dreams to publish in his movie probably hints that these were like formative or very important
significant
dreams.
Right.
Right. So the next, I mean, do we want to keep chewing on this one?
I feel good about that, I also think at this point, I think it's fair to say, I just remembered that there's been a discretion in the way that we maybe build this episode, saying people could send in what they think about the movies, and then actually how logistically we produce this podcast, and that. We did this by the time you're listening. We did this like 2 or 3 weeks ago. So, if you have an idea of what you think the dream is, send it to us, and we'll rope it into another episode.
Yeah, we'll tell you why you're wrong and why there's obviously a very exacting science to this. And so, it's nice for us to be completely correct about what this movie's about.
Exactly,
set you guys straight.
Very close-minded.
Yeah.
Thing we're doing here. So, to piss off. No, please, like, send it in. We'd love to hear what you think. We'd love if you post it on the Facebook page, Dreamboat Podcast, or at Dreamboatcast. Hit us up on the Twitter, Dreamboatcast.
Hit us up on that cast.
Yeah, so let's move on to chapter 3, Scott.
Sure. So the third chapter is one called... The Blizzard.
Yeah,
oh,
the
this
Blizzard
one was
yeah.
nuts. Okay, so the Blizzard one, shout out to all the actors in this scene because they made me, just watching this movie, feel so travel weary and exhausted. Just
cold.
Looking at their faces. There's these guys, they're like roped together like a kindergarten class at the you know, field trip. They're all just tied to each other and they're slogging through this icy blizzard
and
mountain,
just blowing, and there's like icicles in their beards.
Their faces are just so just like gross and like
frostbitten, and
yeah, and they're going, and one of them I guess is kind of the leader, and I think this is meant to be the, once again, the director Akira Kurosawa is sort of, you know, inserting himself. Well, it's a dream of his. I think the leader is him.
I think that's fair case. That's fair to assume.
And these guys are just such lazy dirt birds. They're not getting up, you know. He's like, we gotta keep moving, and they're like, no, you're wrong, what time is it, it's gotta be like, you know, late. And he's like, no, it's like 11, dude, my it's just the snow is making it look dark.
Yeah,
and
there's a
like,
lot of confusion, and they're trying to make it back to camp.
They're just so tired. Watching it, I was so tired. Like every step, it looks like they weigh 100 pounds,
mm-hmm.
like 100-pound shoes or something. They just look so exhausted.
I mean, they've
and
got
so,
their packs, and like it is a slog.
It's bad. But this Akira character is just trying to get them up. And I've had those futility moments in dreams too, where you're like, guys, we've got to go, or like, I'm stuck in like molasses and I'm trying to run, like I need to run really fast, and it's just not working. That captured that kind of dream feeling very well. I would say. But anyways, it continues. They're looking for their camp, right? Or like their base camp.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to move ahead. Pardon me. And the crew one by one just sort of slumps over like they've given up. And he's like shaking them, like, don't fall asleep, you'll die. You know, you can't fall asleep here. And then he, I think it cuts. You don't even see him pass out and fall asleep, do you?
I don't think so.
Or he falls.
I think he falls, but he's just like, he's just falling in the snow. I don't know if I don't think his eyes close necessarily.
It does this sort of cut to him with his eyes closed, looking like a dead man. And there's this sort of like beautiful shimmering shawl that's being wrapped up on him, like under his chin.
And right. It's see, like, it's like colorful.
Yeah. And it's like fluffy looking. And there's this beautiful woman who's like, just kind of tucking him in. Like, hey, hey there, buddy. What does she say? The ice is hot. The snow is warm.
Yeah. The snow is very warm and the ice is hot. Like, get comfy.
But he just looks confused. And he's kind of like, no, like, well, at first he's kind of like, oh yeah, I guess it is warm. And then the more he kind of like, thinks about it, it seems like he's just like roused a little more. He's like, no, I've got to get up. And then she starts like pushing him down. Like, no, stay. Like, you like it. This is nice. And the more that he struggles, the more her like beautiful visage starts to sort of ruffle and like the wind starts billowing in her face. And she starts just looking like a mess of hair and snow, and then
she has these markings, markings on her forehead. We'll get back to her. There's a lot to discuss about this mystery lady.
So anyways, mystery lady starts trying to tuck him in harder and harder as he struggles,
almost keeping him down. It looks like at one point, like trying to hold him down in the snow,
and he finally kind of like props himself up, and this woman just whips away as like a kimono on the wind, basically, is all that's left. Like, there's just this shawl that goes flying out into the wind, and he
gets up super suddenly.
Yeah, he pops up. It's almost like launches this demon off him, and his crew is all still passed out around him, and he sees his little flag, and he sees his little tent, and they were right by their base
camp. Is so close.
And they're all hooting and hollering and cheering, and they make their way back to the camp. But
well, I mean, they slog back to their camp. Yeah, he gets all his men up, and basically like they're coming back to their camp, and that's where it fades out. So presumably a happy ending on that. Maybe some lost fingers and toes.
Head, just being shoulders, real,
just being
we're
real.
Good.
Head, shoulders, eyes and ears, mouth and nose.
I'm looking at the wiki here. It says that Kurosawa was a mountaineer, an avid hiker. So that's probably something that, I mean, these are all inspired from his personal life. So
yeah.
Okay.
So this leads me to another thing, because I have dreaming about a blizzard, right?
Mm-hmm.
To dream about a blizzard suggests you're feeling emotionally cold and frigid. You feel excluded and left out. It may indicate a lack of love and the absence of warmth within your own circle. Now, I know he was a mountaineer, but just like I'm a swim teacher, I have dreams about the pool all the time. They don't necessarily have anything to do with me at a pool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but sometimes a peach is a peach, my guy.
Sometimes a sandwich is just a sandwich.
Yeah, sometimes it's just a sandwich. He's had enough experiences mountain climbing that I think this is like, it's like the skiing dream or the wave pool dream. Like, this is probably just the brain running a simulation, you know? And well, not to like poop all over your suggestion there, but I really do think that since there's folklore figures in this one, that's probably where the symbolism lies, but otherwise it's just the setting is on a mountain.
So let's talk about more of these folklore figures. There's this, you're talking about this lady, yeah?
Yeah, what is that?
I think...
Oh, I got it here. It's a Yuki Onna.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay, yeah, okay.
What is that?
It's a spirit in Japanese folklore. It is known as the Snow Girl. And, this is a lot of words to read. It's a beautiful woman who comes to visit a man and became a man's wife. But very reluctant to go to the bath, and when made to go in anyway, disappeared, leaving only fragmented icicles floating there. So it's like a really fickle snow and ice spirit, it sounds like.
See, because, yeah, I always thought, like, Angel of Death. And that she's thinking, like, the snow's very warm. Just, like, just stay a while. Oh, yeah, the ice is so hot. You'll be comfortable. And, like, literally looks like she's pressing him down into the snow and, like, covering with a shawl. Like, don't get up, don't get up, don't get up. Yeah, doesn't say any of those things, spooky. But yeah, it does get pretty spooky. And then, yeah, when the wind is like whipping and the hair is all over, and then she's got these, you know, different markings on her forehead. Bizarre.
That was very bizarre. I guess the blizzard symbol was what was it again that you looked up?
You're feeling left out in like a familial circle. You're not feeling warmth. You're feeling.
Right, weird.
Feeling like cold vibes or whatever. Feeling some icy vibes from your fam or your community circles. But that's, I mean, I also look up, what does it mean when you dream about being saved, but I don't think it's that he was saved. It's that he, like, pushed through the throes of death, you know?
What does it mean to be bootstraps as hell in your dream? I'm trying to look up snow here real quick. Here we go. Jesus Christ, there's a lot for snakes in this book. There's like two pages of snakes here. Okay, so snow. Snow, snow, snow. Snow in a dream means prophets, or it could mean a cure for an illness. If one sees snow in its season, then it means washing away one's difficulties and exposing one's enemies.
No, that's interesting to me. Washing away one's difficulties and exposing one's enemies. Because he realizes that this lady was not there to help him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, washing away difficulties. So.
Now, here we go. To dream that you find something in the snow suggests you're exploring and ascending your unused potential abilities and talents. You've uncovered some hidden talent and ability within yourself. So he finds the camp at the end, and that's him suggesting that he's stumbling his way through using these new talents, these new unused, untapped potential and abilities. And within that, he discovers, you can call it success, like discovers the goal.
Having this dream at a pivotal moment in his life then, it would seem to me, because this is a big trial.
Taking big license, but yes.
Yeah, of course. It just seems like it's one of the heaviest ones in the movie. In a certain way, in like a survival, like in a very basic fight or flight, like reptilian brain kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
This one definitely elicited that kind of reaction from me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to assume or anything, but this is probably one of those dreams where your subconscious is trying to wrap your head around a large or you know, like a big judgment call that's going to be a formative one in your life, you know, mm-hmm. something like that probably.
And like giving you the ability to push on through.
Yeah, I sound like Miss Rita right now, like one of those fortune tellers a little bit.
Call me now for your free tarot reading.
Let me tell you some vague truths about your life. It ends with them all surviving, right? Like none of them are, they just won't get up when he shakes them, but they all wake up once he starts hollering about the camp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know what about exposing enemies then, because that was the other thing for the blizzard, for the snow, was exposing fraudulent people or whatever, or enemies, and it seemed like they were all his friends, they were just tired.
Well, but I think that the enemy in this case is that lady coming to bring comfort, but really is coming to quicken your demise.
Yeah. Okay.
We've all known one of those. Am I right? All right, fellas?
No. No.
I mean,
snow, I mean, snow witches, you know what I mean?
I mean.
What's up with that? So this last one, the tunnel, is pretty grim. It's You want me to do this one? Little.
Sure. I personally, it was one of my favorites. It's the one that has, for the first time I saw it, really stood out to me. And I know, Scott, you weren't as big a fan.
No, that's fine. I liked it. I want to talk about it.
Yeah. If you want to run through it, and then I may jump in here and there.
Okay. So it's a guy dressed in sort of like what appears to be a military uniform, and he's walking on his own sort of down the street, and there's a tunnel up ahead, and sort of crazy, like, just German Shepherd with bombs strapped to it, basically, comes running out of the tunnel.
Yeah, so it has this vest that I believe are... what are stick grenades, or sometimes
one of those anti-tank,
sometimes
dogs,
known as potato mashers,
right? And I mean, this is, I don't know what was going on, but it was all demonic. It was very hellish vibe, like a red light on it, and it's like snarling and barking at him. So
he's walking towards this tunnel, and the dog first comes out of the tunnel, circles around behind him,
and herds him into it.
Yeah.
So he gets herded into this tunnel by Bomb Dog. And on the other side is sort of like a this beautiful hillside kind of view. But it's... anyway, he goes through the tunnel, and another soldier comes walking out of the tunnel. And his face is all blue. He's like dead. He's like zombie soldier comes out and salutes. And is very respectful the whole time also.
Right. And not like a zombie, but he actually...
talks like a soldier,
very rigid and very formal.
Yeah, and he like doesn't
but
seem
very
to,
blue.
He's so blue, and he doesn't seem to realize he's dead. And he's like, you know, reporting for duty, commander. And this guy is like terrified, like grief stricken. This is probably the Kurosawa stand-in, and he's like, no, like you're dead. And like the soldier says something about his parents leaving a light on for him. He's like, my parents' house is here.
I went home and my mom had baked a cake for me. And the Kurosawa stand-in says, no, you died. You were shot and you were in my arms and you told me that exact story and you died within 5 minutes. Like, you were killed in action. And the ghost is like, what? Killed in action? Doesn't get it, doesn't understand that he passed away. And then from here, the ghost soldier like turns around and goes back into the tunnel. And then about 3 seconds later, you hear a great marching and like hundreds of the same kind of looking army dudes, ghost
whole
soldiers,
platoon.
Exactly. A whole platoon comes back, and they salute the commander, and
they're all blue as well. The blue platoon.
Oh my gosh! And he has to explain to them that they were all killed in action. The entire platoon was killed, and
I think, he says annihilated all at once.
Yeah.
So it's like something went real bad.
I think it was somehow partially his fault, or that he was the commander.
So
that he's the commander that sent them there. He is of a higher rank, and they all like salute him very formally, very respectfully. And he has to explain, they were all killed in action. And the Kurosawa stand-in says, you know, they call you heroes, but you all died like dogs, like super regretful. He says, returning to this world proves nothing. Go back and rest, please. And this just kind of like silence. The soldiers don't know what to do. He doesn't know what to do. Or they're just quietly standing there.
Yeah, they don't say anything after that.
They don't say anything. That's, they're like perfectly
he
still.
He doesn't get any resolution, that poor guy. He's
and,
like crying.
Yeah, well, just like super grief-stricken. And so the only thing what he chooses to do is like takes on the affectation of a military commander, gives them an about face, and they turn around in a forward march, and they march back through the tunnel, and then he like solemnly walks away.
It's pretty nuts.
It is pretty bonkers.
I was trying to slow down on my bonkers. I've been doing a lot of bonkers, but it is pretty bonk a lonk.
The donk-a-donk.
So, dang, what do we even look at first here? Sold or like dogs? Let's try dogs, because that's where it begins.
Mm-hmm. And not just dogs, but like angry dogs, right?
Like Bomb Dog.
Bomb Dog.
Bomb Dog. Okay. Well, a lot of dog things. Oh boy. Oh wow.
There's a lot in there.
It's a lot. In a dream, a dog represents an insolent man who dares to indulge in sinful actions. And if it barks in the dream, it means that a man is impudent and has a repulsive and abominable character. Whoa.
Yikes.
So this is a dress military sort of context here. So this is like...
And also, I want to note, from what I looked at, I don't think that he served in the military at all.
Weird. So this is...
But he definitely... But he lived through World War II and...
World War One as well.
Was a young boy during World War One. Yeah. Which means, you know, all the bombings and everything and... Yeah.
If we're going off the Ibn Sirin definition here, then the dog represents just a really nasty, bad person.
Mm.
Right? So he gets herded into the tunnel by the nasty, bad person, who is then gone. Right? No, it ends with the dog, too.
Oh, yeah, the dog does come back.
The dog comes back. So it starts and ends with a nasty, bad person. Just a real dirt bag. And because of the dirtbag, he gets brought to a situation where he has to confront his former soldiers. What do soldiers represent?
Mm-hmm. You don't have anything in your book?
Well, yeah, let's find what the Ibn said about that. Soldier. Wow. Okay, soldiers in a dream represent God's archangels and the soldiers of mercenary, or the soldiers of mercy.
Interesting.
Hold on.
Oh,
there's
here
a lot of like if you see yourself as a soldier eating a meal, if you see yourself as a soldier doing this.
So here I have to dream that you are an ex-soldier, which kind of seems that way. Like he's in military gear, but it seems like he's like going home. You know, represents your so to dream you're an ex-soldier represents your ability to yield in your decisions and your way of thinking. Now to. See, or to dream that you are a soldier signifies discipline, structure, rigidity, and your staunch attitude. Alternatively, a soldier means that you are preparing yourself to do battle over an issue. You feel the need to defend your beliefs, your values, and your opinions. Which he pretty much does in this dream.
That's pretty spot on.
Now, tunnels. To dream you're going through a tunnel suggests you're exploring aspects of your subconscious. You are opening yourself up to brand new awareness. Indicates your limited perspective, and you maybe you're being closed-minded or narrow in some issue. So maybe this is him needing to face that he's being narrow-minded, and then alternatively... with the soldier stuff, which I just lost here. So he's being like narrow and closed-minded, and he needs to somehow defend his beliefs, his values, and his opinions.
Okay, so kind of a stretch here. It starts off with a military dog, then goes to just sort of your grunt, salt of the earth, low on the totem pole soldiers.
Mm-hmm. The private, I think he calls him private, I forget his name, but...
And then being a former soldier, what you were just saying right now is sort of like coming to terms with, what was it, a judgment, a preconceived judgment, or like a... Maybe this is his impression of the military, seeing them as violent and dangerous at first, and then humanizing them briefly there, where he has a moment where he feels it's very... deep responsibility for them, and he's almost like a paternal figure, right? They're like saluting him.
Or vice versa.
And then it ends again with the dangerous, violent tendencies of it. I don't know if the dog is supposed to represent the soldiers or the military.
Yeah, because it is very much a military dog. One, it's a German Shepherd, and two, it has wearing a vest with grenades. And I don't think it's like a vest rigged to explode or anything like that, but it's essentially like...
It's a Call of Duty dog.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So you just like can grab a grenade from this dog and like you got more grenades. I don't know. It's all very wild.
It's like the screwed up version of the St. Bernards with the rum barrel. It's like
right, the cask.
A G-Shep with a potato mash on it.
Or a half dozen or so.
Yeah. I'm not feeling my interpretation there now that I say it out loud. I don't think the dog represents, I think it's just sort of a frightening thing. I don't think it's supposed to represent the army.
So here's the thing. I don't think so either, but it's forcing him into the situation. It's like making him confront his issue. It's making him confront his whatever subconscious or staunch beliefs or whatever it is, but like literally forces him into the tunnel. And then I think chases him away more or less at the end. I think the dog comes back through the tunnel.
Yes.
And like chases him out of there.
It's like, hey, look at this. Now get out.
Right. Yeah. Nothing more for you here. Like you can't go, or you can't go back. You can never be the same. You can't go back through that tunnel. So you had this experience. You better learn from it because guess what? You're forever changed, sucker.
Woof woof, bitch, and just like keeps going. Wow. Okay. So the tunnel also interesting that there's really, you know, one way in, one way out, kind of set up there in that,
right.
In that bit. Yeah, maybe it's like sort of like passing through a tribulation. Maybe the tunnel itself represents his. It's hard that if he didn't go to war. Actually, then this can't be a dream based on.
And this is for. I mean, maybe he did, but I've like Googled. Tried to figure it out, and like I don't think he served in the military. Alternatively, tunnels can indicate a journey, the other side meaning the end of your journey and a realization of your goals.
Okay.
That's realization of some kind, because he's very much is changed or affected by this experience.
That's much more succinct way of putting it. That's better. So this one was kind of a bummer. This was like probably a not fun dream. I think he.
Yeah, no, it's probably one you woke up from and like thought about for a week.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a crunchy one.
But it's, again, filmed very well. I probably think we were running a little long. Maybe wrap this one.
Yeah. This one up. Thanks for tuning in to our first Dreamboat Goes to the Movies. Hopefully, we can do more of these. Let us know how you guys feel about either Kurosawa's dreams. Let us know on the Twitter. Let us know on our Facebook.
Shoot us an email at dreamboatpodcast@gmail.com. We're always interested, even just general feedback, stuff you like, stuff you don't like, stuff you want more of, stuff you could do with less of, whatever it is, you know? This is a community venture here, and we think that our podcast is better when y'all get involved. It's more fun for us, too. I mean, we could talk about our dreams all day, but... it really is a lot of fun to see people sending stuff in, and we would love
give me your
more
goofiest dreams. I want some more of those like weird whack ass childhood ones. Those are my favorites. If you guys got any crunchy ones there, send those our way.
Yeah, and I think that you know, just try to write it out. You don't know like how to do it. Just write it down as you experienced it, as if you were telling someone a story that actually happened. I think that's the best way to write out your dream.
This is the conversation we're having about dreams, you know?
You know.
All right. Once again, this has been your two captains, Scott
and Connor.
And I got a fever, and the only cure is Sawa. Dreams. Goodbye, everybody.
All right. Take care.